Welcome to the Strength Talk and Shop podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. On the Strength Talk and Shop podcast, we talk all things nutrition, strength, speed, conditioning, strongman, powerlifting, and we really appreciate you listening to this week's episode. We're presented by Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and Gold Standard's best-selling 100% whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold Standard 100% Whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different products such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as their crisp bars, wafers, and almonds. And after dominating the sports nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. If this is something that you're interested in getting into your facility, I highly suggest that you look down in the show notes to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, where his email is available. There you can reach out to Dave and he can get all the products that you need. I highly suggest that you reach out to Dave and the team at Optimum Nutrition Athletics. They literally have got everything that you need to be able to get protein in the hands of your athletes. I use every single one of their products that they have available. I've tried a lot of them. It's really awesome. I love the protein crisp. The vanilla marshmallow is definitely my favorite. I recently tried the chocolate crunch. That one was really good. I also started trying the almonds too as well. Great snacks on the go. I love them. So make sure you reach out to Dave Harvey, Optimum Nutrition Athletics, and thank you for being our sponsor. This week's guest is Tate Tobiasen of the University of North Dakota. We talk about his time of coaching, how he trains his athletes, some stuff that he picked up from Nebraska when he was an intern there. That's a really awesome episode. Really excited to have everybody listen to this episode. Make sure you give it that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you listen to it on Spotify, make sure you share it. Interact with us on social media. Share it with a friend, family member, whoever. Again, thank you to everybody that helps support this podcast and listens every single week. I appreciate every single one of you. And everybody, stay strong. What's up, guys? Strength Talk and Shop podcast. Super excited to have the powerful Tate Tobiasen, the assistant strength and conditioning coach for the University of North Dakota. What's up, brother?
Nothing much, man. Glad to be on.
I'm super happy to have you on here. Somebody that's going to really help push this industry forward. It's going to be a great episode here, man. So, you know, give the listeners just a quick rundown of your background, you know, how you got to where you're at right now.
All right. So my name is Tate Tobiasen. I'm an assistant strength coach here for the University of North Dakota, where I assist with football. Like all small schools, we all just pitch in since it's such a large group. While I'm also in charge of our men's and women's golf, along with our cheer and dance, and then I'll just assist with whatever other sports might need it for testing. So like soccer, if they need to get through stuff, just pitch in wherever. And then before that, I was born and raised in Nebraska. So Nebraska is the king of football. And I love football growing up. It's like God, family, football, but really football is above everything else. So I wanted to try to play it. But problem was I was a skinny kid. Like if you would show up at my high school's practices, you would probably see me literally be flying across the field since I was 115 pounds my freshman year. So then I discovered the weight room. I saw World's Strongest Man on TV and it's like, that's what I want to be. Obviously, I kind of got a little ways to go. But I found that, and then I slowly started learning, oh, there's different ways to do stuff, and then it just started developing more of a love for the weight room. And eventually, there was this former collegiate strength coach turned private to move back with his family, and I walked into his gym one day, and he offered me an internship. And then he was a thrower at the University of Nebraska, and he's like, hey, you should really go and intern with them since that's where I went to school. So it's like, okay, let's do this. And I ended up getting in with them there. And what was cool is, you know how athletic trainers, since they're a little more established than us and their programs, you like get in your first year, you learn, and then you're signed with teams each year.
Yeah.
I was blessed with my collegiate experience is each of my years, I was almost stuck with a different team. So when I started out, during the summer, I got to work with Brian Kmita and Husker Volleyball. If you know anything about Husker Volleyball, they're top tier. And Ryan Kmita, not a lot of people know about him since he's not on social media. That man is one of the most smart and nuanced coaches I have ever met. He knows how to connect, how to keep it simple, but also understands the complexities. I learned with him. Then I met the great Mike Arthur and Boyd Epley. Everyone knows him, but Mike's one of my favorite guys to meet with. Learned through them, and then I eventually got to work with football there. Upon graduating, got the offer to come up here to North Dakota and have been working up here for the past now 2 years.
Man, that's awesome. All it took was one little spark there from the world's strongest man. Isn't that cool? Like, I have a similar story where, like, I remember I was watching, I was like skimming through YouTube and I found like a West Side video and I'm like, what is this madness? And then, like, within a week, I like was in the weight room at my local college in the undergrad, just like checking it out and stuff like that. It's awesome. What was your interactions like with like Boyd up at Nebraska? Cause I mean, that's like the godfather of strength conditioning, man.
Yes. So we actually had a nickname for him as interns. We'd call him the chief, or we actually would call him the godfather sometimes. Yeah. Because like that man, he doesn't get enough credit for his business side. Like anyone could have programmed stuff, but he knew how to convince the coaches that he mattered and that what he was doing mattered. So that was a cool thing walking around with him and then hearing his stories. Like he's 70 plus years old now. When we were there, he squatted, I want to say it was 400 pounds, like for 10 reps at 70. Granted, it was with the safety bar and with hand supports, but still, like, you just learned a lot from him on how to interact with people, just how he was able to stand tall, look people in the eyes, and communicate really well. That's one of the coolest things from him.
That's pretty cool, man. Because like you said, I mean, was he like, what, probably the first strength coach, I think? I don't know.
Yeah, you will have debates between people where it's him or Alvin Roy, the guy for the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah.
But really, or also LSU, something like that. But Boyd's the one who really took it and established it. Actually created the profession by getting the fundraising and then getting assistance.
Well, exactly what you said, though, is that he had to be able to sell that to the coaches, right? Because that's a problem that still happens today. Like, how many youth or high schools do you still have to sell, or colleges even? Like, you have to sell the sport coach on, like, strength and conditioning. So the fact that he was doing it way back then, like, kind of sets a little bit of a blueprint on how you could do it in today's age. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. As the story goes, when he originally went to Devaney said, okay, we're doing this, but if anyone gets slower, you're fired. Obviously, no one got slower. And now we all have our jobs today.
Well, you know what's funny is, like, if you go back and watch, like, I think there's like a YouTube video of like Husker Power. Mm-hmm. I watched it here not too long ago. It is like amazing training. Like, they're sprinting and they're lifting heavy weights and they're getting faster, they're getting stronger. Like, one thing I noticed is like just how big the guys were. Like, they were huge. Like, the importance of putting muscle mass on. Like, did you ever talk about anything like that at all with you guys?
So Boyd's the big guy, but Mike, he's the guy who I developed the closest relationship with.
Gotcha.
If you want to look up a legend, look up Mike. He's a little like 5'6" dude who held world records in powerlifting and stuff. He was really the brains behind a lot of that stuff, along with combining with Kramer. And Mike would always tell me, as football strength coaches, our primary job is first armor building or muscle building, because it is a violent sport. We got to get the guys to last there. Now, in other sports, obviously, muscle mass sometimes can't work out the best. Right. But Mike, he loved the metabolic circuit for its ability to also condition and build muscle at the same time. Maybe it's not your most traditional bodybuilding stuff and muscle building, but we're building muscle for athletics. So actually, you wrote an article for Simply Faster going into the depths of like justifying the metabolic circuits. And some people think it's outdated. Yeah, there's all these new things out, but it's one of the most effective when you're in a large group for the weight room. So that's one thing that Mike always said is like, you build the muscle and then you display the muscle, since they would manifest those gains. Since they would do a strength power split. Mm-hmm. So like 2 days a week, you do a circuit, a high and a low one. And then 2 days a week doing a power high and low. So that was how they would make that muscle and then manifest it. And then it's one thing I think people don't realize from the metabolic circuit is it has a great psychological aspect to it. since it is a killer of a workout. You're on a running clock with it, and you're starting with squat, and we all know squat takes it out of you. So now you're going through the rest, and you're still having to stay engaged. Yeah. So sometimes with kids, when I'd be working with them and we'd be in the circuit, it's like, hey, how well can you stand this? Everyone's going to be tired in the fourth quarter. You're tired now. Can you stay engaged, count all your reps? Do I have to count them for you, or can you be accountable yourself? So that's one cool thing about the muscle building and metabolic circuit that I learned from Coach Arthur.
What would be like a typical metabolic circuit? I'm fascinated by this, man. Like, okay. I want to learn a little bit more about this. Yeah.
So the standard metabolic circuit, you can read about it in Boyd's book, Path to Athletic Power, where he mentions it, along with his story, which I think everyone should read just to at least get our history. And then also A Complete Conditioning for Football with Arthur and Fry, I think it is. It's kind of out of print, so you got to find the book. But the typical metabolic circuit is where you go 8 to 10 exercises, and each one is either 2 to 3 sets of 10, and you generally do a running clock of like 80 to 90 seconds. Now, you can't just do a standard rest period of 60 seconds, but when it's in a large group, it's generally best to just have a rolling clock, and you have your stations for them. And you start with squat or leg press or belt squat or trap bar deadlift, depending on the athlete, if they have certain injuries or so. Point being, a large body movement to get that testosterone and that endocrine system rolling. Right. Now, one aspect that I like to do with the metabolic circuit is you bring like upper body, lower body, or you're going different parts of the body. So I want to say it's peripheral heart training is what it is. And it's basically shunting blood all around the body. So you get that extra conditioning and endocrine response. So we start with legs and say you go to like bench press. Then we go back to say like a glute ham raise, do 10 reps, over to some back. Then we're maybe do another leg if you're on your heavy day. Otherwise, sometimes proceed with caution. Otherwise, you can get really sore. And you're just bouncing all around. So that heart is being really tested. And you get that conditioning aspect. So when you do this, you don't run on those days. So it's the peripheral heart training is something that I learned from it. And some bodybuilder from back in the day who discovered it. And when I made that connection, I'm like, okay, wow, there's more here than meets the eye. Yeah. It's not just some meathead go 3 sets of 10.
Right. Yeah. I love that, man. I think that is like a, I've really not heard. I mean, I've heard of circuits, obviously. I mean, yeah. That's something that's, but nothing quite like that. Where, I mean, that makes total sense what you're talking about, going from the upper to the lower, getting that heartbeat rolling, because then you're getting the conditioning aspect of it out of it, and then, you know, you're gonna get those adaptations while you're also getting the muscle building. Like,
yeah.
And that's brilliant. And like, how big of the, so you talked about the compound movements. So it's a how many compound movements are in it, or is it a lot more assistance work mixed in with that first compound movement? Yeah.
So. Generally, in your beginning ones, you like to do compound movements. So you do your, or I'll just take you through a standard one that I would say do myself.
Okay.
So I generally would start with squat. Then I personally like to go to glute ham raise, since I like to train the hamstrings in a fatigued state where you can control it. Since a lot of the times our hamstring injuries happen when we're a little more fatigued. Let's just get that going, really hammer those legs. Then we go to a bench press. Then I like to do a row version. So I like an inverted row, machine row, whatever you got set up. Then if it's on a heavy day, go to a like rear foot elevated split squat or walking lunges. These will kill you since it's 10 each leg. So good luck. Then go back, do like a vertical pull, add in a shoulder, add in a tricep, add in a bicep. And maybe you can add in one other thing if you want for a weak point. So that's standard what it does. Start with the more complex ones, then we just filter into the bottom. And all in all, that takes about like 36 minutes if you're able to stay on the clock.
See, I like that because you can get a lot of your bang for your buck exercises, but then also too, you just nailed it on the head as far as the weak point aspect. We're always trying to bring up those weak points. And you can do it in such a quick fashion manner. And then two, you talked about a little bit about the mental fatigue behind it. Like that's a big one. I can imagine where, you as a coach, it helps you understand like, hey, where are we getting tired at in the workout and where are they at mentally throughout the workout? You know what I mean?
And then it's also a fun challenge to the guys. It's like, hey, former players before you have done this, like legends in the field that you've heard, can you hold with them? Can you hold this standard that's been along? Like it's one of those everyone likes to talk about traditions and stuff. I think this is one of those traditions that really actually benefits you and can build on. And you have a sense of pride when you get through your first circuit.
Wow. That's pretty cool, man. That's fascinating. I learned something pretty good there. I appreciate that. Now you talked about a little bit, you know, you've kind of incorporated it within your own training and your own coaching and stuff like that. You also wrote a really great article on Simply Faster that I really wanted to kind of dive into as far as like, you know, kind of finding your way as a coach, like, you know, building your principles. I think that's important to be able to understand. Can you kind of dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. So going back to Mike Arthur, like, I can't say enough about that man. He's influenced me more than any other coach. When he was at Nebraska, he read the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And he got the inspiration to create the 10 Husker Power Principles. So I got thinking to myself when I was a young coach, like, I'd write a West Side workout, a 5-3-1 workout, bouncing all around. I'm like, but what are the underlying principles that make all of these programs work? So I started analyzing that since there is, Lord knows, there's so much information out there. There's a gazillion podcasts, a gazillion certifications, articles, books, whatever. And it can be really easy to get caught up in that. Like, how many people have you seen, they see an exercise on social media, and then all of a sudden that's a staple in their workout the next day? It's like, I don't like the coaches who never change, but I also really don't like the coaches who change every single week. So principles are that North Star for us to kind of follow through, and they're broad, but not too broad, where it's like, oh, we lift weight. Yeah. Well, no, duh. It's like, how do we lift weight? So like, let's see if I can remember. I have 7 principles that I follow. Can I remember them off the top of my head? It's athlete first training. Since they're humans in front of you, it's not some RSI value, some vertical. Yes, all that stuff matters, but you first got to connect with the people. Like, I've had immense success with my women's golfers because I treated them as athletes, not just as golfers. I'm like, hey, let's go do this. Let's go get this challenge. I believe in you, girls. Then the next one, I'm going to end up forgetting some of these, but my article's up there. Stuff like progressive overload, where we know that we always need to progress. And that doesn't mean 5 pounds every week.
Yeah.
Load does not mean the weight on the bar. Load means total, like, reps, sets, how deep you're going, just making sure that the athlete's always getting a new challenge, a new stimulus going forward. Since if they squat 225 and just keep that all year long, we're doing them a disservice.
Right.
Then other principles, I like Charlie Francis's high low or heavy light. You see this in a lot of successful programs there, where you make your highs high, you just really hammer it out, get the most out of it. And then your lows low, because you can't just do 2 workouts a week. That's kind of defeating the purpose. So let's make sure we hit it high, hit it low, still get some of that stuff done, more of our accessories. And then I also like strength power. I know a lot of coaches like to put it all in together, where you have like your power, then all your strength exercises. I like making 2 specific days just to really help hammer it home. Since guess what? I can both Olympic lift and jump squat in the same day with that. Yeah, I know. It's crazy how you can
put
that both in a strength power split. And then also at the end of the power day, sometimes you do like shoulder rehab, core work. It's not just purely jumping and sprinting. There'll be a little bit of extra stuff in there. Then other principles, successive patterning. Like, I don't believe you need to regress every single exercise.
Right.
Like, sometimes just have a kid, see if they can jump. You don't need to do a huge regression. Oh, let's do a snap down, then this. See where they are, then do that. But make sure that we're building on stuff. Like, start with an RDL, go to single leg RDL, build up stuff like that. Make sure we're not just throwing them onto the BOSU ball and doing some weird crap with them, just so that I can get some Twitter followers. So those are a few of the principles. I'm forgetting a few, just like whenever someone's put on the spot, like, oh, I can't remember. So sorry that I can't remember those, but you can find, just look me up on Simply Faster and you can find my 7 principles, which I think are important for a North Star.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that, man. I love that analogy of having to be the North Star to guide you through everything. Because what I've found is that when you have your set principles, right, it's easy for you to make a decision when you're creating your program or when you're sitting down trying to figure out where you're going to have this in your plans, right? Oh, this doesn't fit within my principles. But also, too, you might need to change your principle up a little bit. Because what I found too, when I'm typically adding something in, right, I'm probably going to have to, I have to take something out because we can't have 15 different things going on at one time, right?
It's figuring out those little guys or heuristics pushing you forward, understanding not just, hey, I need X exercise. It's, I need like a hamstring exercise during this time that completes this type of muscle contraction. Now, how do I fit that in?
Exactly. Those are hard questions that you have to answer. And I think that over time, especially when you're a young coach, you don't really understand those things.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so important to be able to read like what you're talking about and to go out and get that experience of seeing it. Like, you had a great experience as far as like being able to see different teams and talk with different coaches and everything like that. Because you have to have that kind of that failure sometimes where you're like, oh my gosh, that workout was absolutely terrible. Why did I program this with this? They were running into each other here. Like, it's just going to take time to understand little things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's important to then look at the coach, different coaches' workouts out there, and not just look at it as set reps, think of how they organize it throughout the flow of their weight room, understanding those nuances. Like at North Dakota here, we got 16 power racks, a great dumbbell set. Like for the size of our school, my boss, Coach Bockel, has done an awesome job at just helping to create a quality weight room that we can get a lot of kids through. Now, I know that at some smaller schools, you might only have like four racks. So you can't do all the same things and you have to have those nuances. So it's reading a person's workout, understanding the principles that they're coming from, what they're trying to accomplish in that time.
It's, and too, like you made that analogy about the North Star too. It's like, what's our end goal here, right? Where do I want to be at? Because, you know, if let's say you get a kid from freshman year, right? You're going to have 4 years with them. Like, I have my set principles. I have my annual plans on where I want you to be at in 4 years. And I love that you talked about the athlete first side of things, like treating them as an athlete. I think that's important because it gives them an understanding of why you're doing something, right? The athletes always want to know the why behind everything. It's very important that you understand that why and you have that set principles ahead of time and those annual plans. Is that something you've kind of found to be successful too as well?
Yeah, and connecting with the athletes is so important. Now, I will add the caveat, like telling the athletes the why, you don't need to do that, like gather everyone around and go, hey, this is why we're doing this triple set. But if they do come and ask, feed them. Like, let's get the next set of coaches in. Since how many times have we heard of people saying, oh, this guy's just a coach because he's an athlete? Okay. Who was his coach ahead of him? Who could have poured into him and actually given him some better direction? Don't just say, oh, because I said so, because I have a certification. Give them that little bit of stuff, educate them enough, and then maybe guide them onto some other things. Like, for instance, myself and then another one of my assistant coaches, Will Rattel, we both put out some stuff. I write my articles. He has nice social media. It's like, hey, if you want to know a little bit more, go check out his stuff. Just Google his name. You can find some of his things. Or even my boss, Coach Bockel, he's written something for Simply Faster. And hey, if you want to understand why he does what he does, he has that all written up there for you. If you want to dive more, like give them that little nugget and then see how far they can take it if they want.
Yeah. And for other coaches too, just to understand for themselves, like what, like we talked about that before the podcast, how many times, or you talked about it here on the podcast, sorry, like how many times you see something on social media and next thing you know, a coach is putting that into their workout. Well, you didn't really understand why they had it in their workout in the first place. Right. So like right now you and I are doing this over Zoom. It's so easy for you to be able to reach out to a coach and be like, hey coach, could I get like a quick 10-minute, 15-minute Zoom call with you so we can kind of go over what your program does, you know, or go visit somebody. Like that is something that it's kind of like a lost thing where it's like, everybody's doing the same stuff. It's just, how are you doing it just a little bit differently? Right.
Yeah. Figuring out those nuances of the program. So over quarantine, I had a great chance. Even when I was back in Nebraska, I had a chance to sit down with every one of the coaches and I had like my 8 questions. Like, what do you think's overrated, underrated? I'm a freshman. Take me through my 4 years with you. And I learned a ton from them. And then even over quarantine, reaching out to coaches. So I know one of your mentors, Joe Quinlan, I called him and he was gracious enough to give me a 45-minute chat. And Lord knows he does great stuff down at Northwestern or Northwest Missouri State.
Yeah. Joe's the man. That's It's actually, if you look at what that program's done, like since he's gotten there, it's absolutely insane. Like all those national championship rings. But yeah, like you said, like put yourself out there. Like what's the worst that could happen? They say no.
Yeah.
Well, then you know,
just be gracious, like coach, insert name, give them your background. Would you be willing to do some time with me? Like give a little call, give them the questions ahead of time, make it simple. Like, I think that's what helps so many young coaches. Just reach out. Don't do it over social media. Find like an email, unless you can't really find an email.
Right.
Be kind and compassionate with it. Okay. And then try to work on their time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man. I completely agree with that. But then too, like, it's only going to help you in the long run is that you're going to learn so much from them. And they're going to remember that conversation that they had with you because you were, you know, not a lot of people reach out nowadays to get that information. Like you want to learn as much as you possibly can. What's some of the biggest things that have kind of helped you on your road as being a coach? And you kind of talked about a little bit, like was having those conversations with other coaches, asking the right questions, but what else has kind of helped you?
So things that have really helped me, first off, I've had just amazing mentors around me from Boyd, Mike Arthur, all the coaches at Husker Power. Like they've all helped pour into me. Sometimes I'll even talk to them again, chat with them and stuff. Other things, just having that eagerness to learn. Like I love reading and I have something where I'm not the biggest fan of just always reading online. So I like a good book in front of me. So I love getting those ones. Like I think every coach out there should read Science and Practice of Strength Training by Zach Ziorski and Kramer. And now I believe the new edition, there's a third author since they added in VBT. That one's great for figuring out the nuances of it. Then also the Strength Training Manual by, I'm going to butcher his name, but I believe it's Mladen Jovanic. Like that one is one of the most nuanced approaches to strength training possible. I love how he's not dogmatic. He's obviously done all of his research, figuring that. That one just helped me grow and understand, oh, this is how we can change the load, add a little agile periodization and stuff like that. And then podcasts, I love listening to them, getting coaches like you. Otherwise, learning from people like Travis Mash, Dave Tate, those guys who have established, who have time under the bar themselves, and then have coached many athletes who they themselves have gone on to great success. So those are the things. And then also when you intern, make sure you make great connections with somebody. So back in my time at Nebraska, I have two great friends from there, Dalton and Blake. And we haven't actually worked together in 2 years. We have a text chain where we are daily like messaging each other, like, hey, how do you do this? What are your thoughts on this? And we're just always connecting with it. So we might not like see each other, except for when we go back home and we're all back in Nebraska. But that's just one way that we can grow, where you can be like vulnerable and say, hey, I don't fully understand this. What do you know? So I know my boy Blake, he's a great Olympic lifter. He came from the D3 level. He knows what it, like these small schools are, all those difficulties. So it's fun to pick his brain with it. And he can connect with athletes like no other. Like it's insane how well he can connect with a freshman. He'll be best friends with them by the end of the lift. And then Dalton, he has a hockey background. He's also gone out to the East Coast to work in some private facilities. So I love picking his brain since he obviously with some of that ice background. And he also is more versed in certain like programming styles, like say triphasic or some of Christian Thibodeau's things. So if I'm not understanding something, I can go ask him. So it's really cool to surround yourself with some of those friends so you can just reach out and go, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of this article? I think that's one of the biggest growth reasons for me.
I find that to be very interesting and some great advice as far as right there is like being vulnerable when you don't understand something. In your circle, who can you go to that might have the answer? And like being able to have that big circle to be able to cast that net out and maybe get, you know, help understand, because we all go through different situations, right? They may have already gone through that situation. Mm-hmm. So they can help you kind of navigate the waters and like, hey, I did this, but if I were to do it again, I'd probably maybe change this up, or this is something I would not do kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like that to me is like some of the best advice you could possibly give a coach right there, that you just nailed it on the head, man, because you can get so much valuable information that they've already done and experienced, that maybe they've already run through the brick wall for you kind of thing.
Yeah. Why should we have to learn from our own mistakes? I want to learn from everybody else's. That way I can minimize mine.
Exactly. I completely agree. You talked about too, as well, like being able to connect with the athletes and like you as a coach. So like, obviously when I was preparing the podcast, I know that you have competed yourself in doing some lifting. How has your own lifting kind of helped you as a coach?
Well, my own lifting as a coach, first off, everyone should be able to demonstrate some of the lifts. And then while we don't all need to be the jack guy, it's still important that the athletes understand, hey, this person lifts, they can lift. That sometimes while I like take a recording of one of my squats, put it on social media or me running and just like, hey, this guy is doing some of the same things we do, help to get that buy-in. And then lifting also for us, we talk about mental health for just us as coaches. It's a great way for us to just relieve stress and stay healthy ourselves, stay strong. And then it's also kind of cool. If you have a certain level of strength, you have a little cocky freshman in there thinking they're trap bar deadlifting a bunch. You walk up cold, just pick it up, drop it, walk away and go add more.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the fun things of it. You know, that's probably not the most like approvable answer, but it's lifting's important just to help get the kids buying. And then also give yourself confidence, know that you yourself can push these challenges.
Yeah, that's important. You just said building your own confidence, because if the athletes, they see you working out, they see, because they all probably follow on social media and stuff like that too, as well, right? They see that and they see, you know, Coach Tate getting after it. Like, all right, we're going to bring some energy into the weight room ourselves because he's getting after it on his free time, right? You know, because you're working long hours, you're working, you know, long days and everything, and you're still able to get in there and do what you're supposed to do. But then too, I can't remember who it was I had on the podcast. They put up a lot of their meals and what they ate online. And they knew because a lot of their athletes would be following them, right? And I thought this was so genius. And like, it would kind of trigger the athlete to be like, oh yeah, like I'm out of the weight room for 23 hours, right? I need to be able to make the right decisions outside of the weight room too as well. So like you as a coach, you have so many influences throughout the day that you necessarily are not with them per se. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, you know, this as a new father, you don't know who's always watching at every time. So you don't know sometimes what the effects are you're having. So sometimes doing that is just that good little influence. It's better than any lecture that they might get just saying, oh, they're living their life that way. Maybe I should start following suit.
Exactly. It's funny you say that. Like I just was recently reading like within the first year, like the most development happens within like a child's life because they're learning strictly everything off of body language. And so like for me, it's made me shape up like, what is my body language teaching to others? And like, how am I exemplifying that to others? Cause like, that's a hidden, I mean, that's a way of communication, right? And if that's how you're learning, like you need to have good body language and understand what are you putting off as far as your body language and everything like that. I had a great coach one time give us interns a really good, and this is something that I thought was really fascinating, was somebody giving a presentation in the room, right? And the way that they were standing in the room, two of the athletes were behind them. So two athletes were not getting eye contact per se, right? And so it made me realize, okay, when I'm giving a presentation at my work or to my athletes, is everybody in front of me? Am I able to have good eye contact with them? And how am I projecting myself as far as body language? Because when you look at the picture, there was two people behind, there was no eye contact, and their body language is like, why are we even in here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just little small things that you can pick up. And a part of that comes with what you said, confidence and just kind of knowing where you're at within the program and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Be human. Treat them as humans. Look them in the eye. Give them that respect.
Yeah, that is for sure. Well, as we wind down here, man, I want to go ahead and plug all of your social media. If people want to reach out to you, how can they reach out to you?
Basically, you just look at my name, Tate Tobiason, T-O-B-I-A-S-O-N. I'm on Twitter, Instagram. I probably won't friend you on Facebook. Don't send me a LinkedIn since I'm never on there. But if you want to reach out via those, I'd be happy to chat, reach out. It's always fun to grow and connect, especially since I know not a lot of us were able to go to any of the conferences this year. So I know our university, we had to go virtual for CSCCA this year just because we weren't approved for travel. So it'd be fun to reach out if anyone ever wants to chat or any young coaches, just feel free to reach out. Let's help each other, guide us through, acknowledge some of the harsh realities of the field, but also how we can help navigate those better.
Yeah, man. I love your articles that you've put up on Simply Faster and some of the blogs that you put up. So I personally will vouch, like, go read those guys. They are absolutely awesome. Make sure you reach out to Coach here too as well. So our last question obviously is, you know, what are you grateful for, man?
First off, I'm grateful that I still have a job for strength and conditioning after the whole COVID thing. Like, I got furloughed on my birthday last year, which sucked, but it was one of those, you saw the writing on the wall. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that it's beautiful weather out here. I'm thankful that I'm at North Dakota, where I get to actually do what I love. We're so blessed in America here, where we can do a job that really isn't essential. Like, I know we're essential to athletic development, but not essential to the world. So I'm just blessed that I get to do this, that I love work with the kids. And also I'm blessed that in my position, I get to help work with our FCA here, help pour into our kids even more. And I'm blessed for the friendships that I have developed in this field, where you see on Twitter, there can be a lot of fighting and stuff, but when you find those real genuine people in there, it's fun to reach out and have those conversations where we can say, hey, I disagree a little. Why do we disagree? Let's chat that through. So I'm thankful for that. And also thankful for technology. That way we can get all these podcasts and just have that barf of information coming at us.
Oh my gosh. It's so much, man. It's so much fun, man. But listen, Tate, you're somebody that's going to help push this industry forward, man. I'm very, very thankful to be able to have you on the podcast. So thank you again for doing this, man.
Awesome. Thank you, man.
No problem. Everybody, make sure you reach out to him, follow him on social media, read his articles, wherever you can find him, and everybody, stay strong.